What I really want to go into is how we don't have enough Keanu Reeves Matrix whoa moments to realize how fast we got here and how far we've come, and also how far libraries have come. Yes, welcome to A Little Too Quiet, the Ferndale Library podcast, brought to you by the Friends of the Ferndale Library. Giving a little bit of a mini-sode here, where producer Kelly Bennett and myself, Jeff Milo, are going to be riffing a little bit about some Ferndale library history, especially about how this library has evolved, like I just said. We've all had our devices evolve, we have so much more access, and that is also true of your local library. There's so much more you can do. We're going to look back to the 90s. We're calling this the dream of the 90s in honor of Portlandia. Kelly, how you doing?
Doing all right today.
Yeah. So
it's weird. I've got a mic now.
Yeah, you do. You're usually a producer. You've got the knobs and the dials. Now you've got a mic.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think anyone who's listening between the ages of 30 and 35 and 50, you came of age with a local library in the 90s.
Yeah.
And Kelly and I are sneakily not revealing our ages, but we worked at this library in the 90s.
Yeah.
And how much it's changed.
Yeah, I actually started here in 1998. Mm-hmm. It was my second library job. Mm-hmm. So I felt like a big shot because, you know, I was leaving another library job for more money.
Right.
What I thought was going to be like a really, you know, great experience. And I ended up being kind of bummed out because mm-hmm. the library that I was coming from was a bit more advanced. And so I really had to struggle and ask for more responsibilities mm-hmm. and introduce new concepts to the folks who were working here.
Oh, you wanted to be a trailblazer.
Yeah.
Push this into the vanguard.
Just to give folks an idea, even back in 98, I mean, we had computers, obviously.
We had computers.
But this library was still kind of half and half. We mm-hmm. were using something called a photoscope, which, frankly, you and I should not know what that is. But, you know, I'm going to try to reserve some judgment. But it took a picture of your library card.
Uh-huh.
And the cards that are in the front of the book with the title, as well as a date due slip, so that when those books were brought back, you had to check these little slips off. And then when the film was developed, whatever wasn't checked off, mm-hmm. you got a typed up little postcard telling people, you know, you've got to bring this stuff back. And it was a lot of work.
For the young people listening at home, we used to wait for film to develop, and we also typed things on typewriters.
We still do a little.
I loved this library. I came to this library a lot as a kid in the 90s, as early as 91. I think I was like a first grader through sophomore year in high school was my decade. So obviously I spent a lot of time in this library. And, you know, I got to say, I mean, when you're a kid and you go to something like the mall, again, 90s reference, you know, what is the mall's full of neon lights and sleek marble and all these cool stores. And then I would come to this library in 91 and 92, and it felt like a bit of a time machine. It felt mm-hmm. like this library was kind of frozen back in time for a little bit.
Yeah.
Absolutely not the case now here at the Ferndale Library.
That's true.
We entered the future more than a full decade ago. This library was renovated, as you heard in the episode with Kevin Deacon Krause, former president of the library board and friend of the library. But yeah, I don't know. You know, there was, you know, card catalogs were here.
Oh, I have one of those in my kitchen. Mm-hmm. I know you have one too, right?
I did. I do have one of the old library card catalogs.
I hauled it up my stairs like one piece at a time. Mm-hmm. I use it to hold spices now.
There was... And I have to say, maybe I was just hyper aware of this as a kid, but I feel like the old book smell was prevalent back here in the 90s. We've lost it. I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing. It depends on who's listening.
I will say, you know, we were talking about this place is like old fashioned and stuff. At some point in the early 2000s, we got a Gates Foundation grant for public computers, as well as a web server.
Right on.
No one knew how to do anything with the web server, so I gave it a go. And I made our first website.
Mm-hmm.
I taught myself some HTML. I even, like, I messed around with it. It was pretty cool to have that as, like, a thing under my cap. Like, literally, no one cared because no one knew how to do it. They're just like, if you can make it happen, make it happen. So I think that's been the coolest thing about the Ferndale Library, then public, now area district, is that even now, when a lot of us do know what we're doing, we've been given kind of the room to grow, the room to explore. There isn't someone always hanging over our shoulders here to, like, make sure that something's done every day. Like, I mean, this podcast is one of those things. Like, Jeff had an idea, and our director was like, that sounds great. Figure out how to make it happen.
It's a laboratory.
Yeah.
A library laboratory.
You know, and our concert series was given as, like, a, well, you're into the local music scene back in, like, 2006, 2007. Why don't you have bands perform here?
Right.
And so, you know, only knowing about bands from, like, seeing them at shows, I figured out how to book them and what we needed. And I don't know if that's the case at every public library, but this one is a wonderful place to work because of that.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, definitely thankful for that. But I think, you know, I think a lot of libraries can relate to this, that there was this paradigm shift right after Millennium or right after the, you know, late 90s. I think libraries, I think they really all accelerated along with that technology. You know, we have our phones and the world is at our fingertips. But, you know, old school 1991 libraries, you had to go and look at microfiche and look through card catalogs.
Yeah. And even if there were computers, the things they could give you were not quite as cool.
Right.
Here's a story from my old library days, because I grew up in Madison Heights, which is not too far from Ferndale. And our library was walking distance, and it was, you know, a place I loved to go. And they had these computer programs that would, like, match you with books as a teenager. And
what?
A friend of mine, where you'd fill out this piece of paper, and it would be kind of like Novelist is now, where it's like kinds of characters that you like. And then it would, you know, you'd get this dot matrix printout of books you should check out. And my friend and I decided to try to trick the system. And so we put together these impossible combinations of things. And I could tell the librarians knew that's what we were doing, but they were happy to see us there. And so they were, they were kind to us anyway. They might've been less kind if they knew that I was chopping out pictures of Eddie Vedder from their magazines. And I admitted to them later when I worked there, which was like one of those, like, hey, when I was 12, I used to cut out pictures out of your Rolling Stone.
Man.
I know. Don't do that, people.
No, don't do that. I think the most disruptive or mischievous thing that I ever did in a library was probably be a 6 or 7 year old sort of patrolling the aisles as though I had a proton pack, pretending to be a Ghostbuster, reenacting the first scene from the film Ghostbusters.
Right.
And
I mean, it's in a library.
Probably startling people when I would, like, play act them. They were the ghost and just, you know, happening upon strangers. Never kicked out of the library for that.
Well, that's
sure,
good.
Sure, they all found it charming. But yeah, so 90s also means VHSs.
We used to have, I mean, we've always had a very robust movie collection here. We've had a lot of librarians.
Totally.
Heads of libraries that were very passionate about movies. A former director, Mary, I know when, as soon as she could buy VHS tapes, she would buy them for here.
I was here weekly to get them.
Yeah.
Kids, we had cassettes, and they would go into VHS video home system, whatever it was called. I'm almost too young to know what they were.
They were in these lovely brown boxes here. And we charged for them at the time because mm-hmm. we have not always been super well funded. Mm-hmm. But our circulation head would make these 50 cent weekends, she called them. So instead of a dollar or a dollar 25, each movie would be 50 cents, whether it was new or old or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And people would come in here and check out 25 VHS tapes, which you couldn't hold them in two hands. You had to have bags. And at that time, we checked stuff out like by hand. Like the person had to sign for each of one of these. Mm-hmm. We had to stamp. We had to write numbers down.
Paperclip things together.
Oh my gosh. It was like a workout.
Yeah.
It was kind of amusing. And then when everything came back, you had to like open them up, make sure that the tape was in there, rewind them if you know. It was interesting.
Yeah.
It's so funny how things change because that was a regular part of our lives if you worked in the circulation mm-hmm. department or like you at the time were a page. Like
yeah.
those weekends, that's all you'd be doing is putting movies away.
So I was only 15 or 16, so I was obviously easily aggravated. And this definitely made me roll my eyes and consider it a little bit of a hell for sure from a 15-year-old standpoint.
Yeah.
So, yeah. But, yeah, and I'm also would like to apologize for completely wearing out the library's VHS copies of Princess Bride and Spaceballs. That was on me. But yeah, something else that came around is eventually we started going more into the future. We had CDs too.
Oh my gosh. So one of the things I remember, and this actually just came back to me today, because I manage our CD collection now, and I order from a couple of different sources. It's all online. It's, you know, it's easy. It's like
mm-hmm.
shopping.
Mm-hmm.
But when I first started here, we had a very small CD collection. We weren't allowed to buy anything that had a parental advisory.
Oh my.
Yeah. And
it's like how my mom wouldn't let me listen to David Bowie or Prince.
Right. I had to like turn the sound down if there was a swear word in the song, or the CD would be taken away from me.
We were in a library. We couldn't have swear words on our CDs.
Yes.
In the 90s.
At least that was the attitude at the time. Mm-hmm. But, and our circulation head at the time, she purchased them, but we would buy them out of Columbia House and BMG catalogs. And after she realized that I liked music, she let me help, you know, pick. But you had to pick a certain number.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, our budget was fairly small.
Mm-hmm.
So it was like best bang for your buck. And there's still some of these CDs. Like we have a Beach Boys Greatest Hits that has been in that collection since 1999.
Yeah. And
it's circulated probably 200 times.
Radiohead's Kid A is in there from 2000 somewhere.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm sure that I was like, we need this.
Mm-hmm.
This is a great album. And I may have even checked it out.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's so funny how those kind of things change. But if you think about it, some of it is the same. You know,
right.
People were looking to libraries forever for mm-hmm. entertainment in addition to education.
Mm-hmm.
If you worked in a library, you knew that.
Right.
If you were just sort of adjacent to libraries, you might not have known that until more recently. That's how people use libraries, but it's always been that way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, even if you were picking up a book, mm-hmm. it wasn't always for a school project. It
right.
was, I don't want to purchase or I can't afford to purchase this new novel or mm-hmm. whatever, and the library was here for you. So moving out into those other types of media made perfect sense for libraries.
Yeah. Yeah. Being a kid, I mean, obviously I was reading enough books in grade school and middle school because it was like assigned, but I came here for my research mm-hmm. when I had to do a project on Neptune or whatever. And I came here with mom to get videos.
Yes.
And I came here for story times. You know, so I did regard the library as something, as a place to go that wasn't just to take books out, obviously, because we had those awesome VHS collections. But but also, I think you can really see how libraries got their feet moving, though, you know, from being 1995, 1996 microfiche card catalogs yeah. to getting online, to having an online catalog, to having ebooks, to having now, you know, you can use a library card with an app we have to listen to music. So,
yeah. It's, you know, being the age that I am, things have moved so fast, but I feel like because I worked in a library and I used the library, I was along for the ride in a way that I think other people might not have been.
Yeah.
Because I could see how the public was using, you know, things out there in the world. Whereas if I had just kind of moved through my life without the library, I may not have seen those bigger trends change. I mean, when e-readers became really big, the library had to respond,
right,
you know, to have services for people to check out. But in addition to that, we had to respond with educating ourselves about them and being ready to help people who got them.
Right, because we're not the geek squad, but we kind of have to be.
In particular, you know, older folks were getting them from their kids. Mm-hmm. You know, their 20-something kids are like, hey, mom likes to read books. Let's get her an e-reader so she doesn't have to have a stack of print books.
Right.
Which is a lovely idea, but then who's setting that up?
Right.
How much, you know, are your parents spending on books? Bring them to the library and we'll help them figure it out.
Mm-hmm.
The number of times a week that I say that even to people like, oh, just bring your phone in or bring your tablet in. We'll show you how to use it. I think that's, again, another sort of secret library thing that people who don't come to libraries or don't work in libraries don't realize that we do for people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've helped people update their phones. I've helped people post things to YouTube. You know, as technology advances, but there aren't resources to teach you how to use it, libraries are kind of filling that niche as well.
Yeah. Every day someone comes in with their phone, they ask a question and we figure it out.
Right. I've probably held, you know, dozens of phones in the last couple of months, just, oh, do you mind if I, you know, poke around and help you out? And that's a service that, you know, you can't really get anywhere else. It's, if you just have a general computer question, you either have to ask your kids who may not have time or patience to help you.
Right.
Or you come to the library where somebody will, you know, have seen that problem already or research it.
So. We'll have infinite patience. And if you bring your Apple phone, we won't try to sell you on an upgrade.
Exactly.
We're just here to help you. But yeah, as we saw the libraries sort of, as I said, get their feet moving to keep up with this technological evolution, I think that that's probably true from the century, the last whole century. The libraries, on our library especially, the MO is how can we maximize our offering of access to you to knowledge and entertainment. It's just however we can expand access, we're going to run to meet that.
Yeah.
And that's what it's been.
I think, yeah, it's, you know, we talk about this revolution recently, and there has been a big revolution, you know, the idea that librarians aren't women with buns and glasses yelling at you all the time. But all you have to do is look at a Neil Gaiman quote or even like Stephen King or some of the early lovers of libraries and know that they've been, you know, librarians have been affecting people's lives for years, you know, from slipping a kid a book that maybe their parent wouldn't quite love that they were reading,
right,
you know, to simply being an ear for somebody to talk to or directing you to a resource you didn't even know existed. I helped a friend of mine, like via Facebook. This is a term I've heard bandied about. The personal librarian, like someone knows you work in libraries, so they like ask you literally everything because they know that you're going to research it and figure it out for them.
Oh, yeah.
She had like a real estate test that she had just failed and was going to take again the next day, and she needed something to help her brush up. And I asked around and got her a resource. Not only did she pass it, she ended up like passing on that information to like four or five other people that had been in her class rather than like have them pay for some booklet to help them. So that's just kind of out in the world library stuff.
Yeah. You know, we talk about how libraries are louder places. I think that another little bit of revolution we saw transferring over between the 90s and now is that libraries started really responding to what their community wanted. I think that's something we did. You know, we were putting out surveys in the late 90s and also doing surveys in the early 2000s before we went up to this renovation. But we wanted to be what our community wanted us to be.
Yeah.
And I remember, you know, the library here in the 90s was a quiet place.
Yeah, as best as it could be.
Yeah. I think that, yeah, this that the library can be anything is what I saw as a change.
Yeah, that's true. It's, you know, it's not always loud. Because most people need the library to be at least temporarily quiet.
Right.
You know, there can be conversations here and there, but you know, the majority of people are using the library to either get some work done, find some entertainment. Most libraries these days have spaces and time and space in general for those louder activities, or even just sort of like symbolically loud activities.
Mm-hmm,
you know, the fact that there was a big move for libraries to have Minecraft programs.
Right.
Those didn't necessarily like become loud, audibly loud, but the idea that this strictly entertainment in the eyes of a lot of people activity was happening in the library, I think is a symbol that we're trying to fit, you know, fill needs for people.
Yeah.
You know, or like the adulting programs that we had here.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, some of it was practical stuff you could expect to come from a library, like financial advice, and some of it was etiquette, and some of it was doing a dinner party.
Mm-hmm.
They made macrame in here a couple weeks ago.
Right.
Like, just those things that, you know, you could Google, but wouldn't you rather come to a place, see a presentation,
hang out,
ask them questions?
Yeah.
You know, and kind of keeping up that physical contact aspect of our lives that a lot of us are getting away from.
Right. Any other lingering thoughts about the fond nostalgia of the 90s?
I just remember how big of a deal summer reading was. Not that it isn't now, but in this place, there was a lack of programming in general, except for kids programming. And so they really laid it all out on the line for summer reading.
Yeah.
Just kids' names written on shapes all over the library. If you were a page or even just a part-time younger person, you were up on a ladder sticking stuff to the walls.
Yeah, cut out construction paper.
You had to be there for the big party at the end, you know, with whether you liked children or not. You were surrounded by them, like helping them play games or giving out prizes. And you know, there was some of that, those very like wild and seemingly uncontrolled, but it also felt good to be a part of that. You know, at the very least, we're reaching out to like the kids in this community in a big, showy way.
Yeah, those were like some of my clearest memories.
Yeah.
Were those closing parties.
And so some things change and some things stay the same. And
yeah.
I think summer reading, you know, it isn't the only thing a library does, but like, If your library does it well, you're serving your community, you know, and you're creating those memories too.
Heck yeah.
Yeah.
And one other thing that hasn't changed before we let you go is obviously you always come to the library in the 90s. You would always come here if you had that project on Neptune because you had to walk away with three research books. But sure, you can find stuff online. You might not come here for the books, but you have to talk to the librarian first. My goodness, don't Google alone. Don't go to Wikipedia. Talk to an information specialist, and you'll find one here at the library, at your library, or at this library, the Ferndale Area District Library. This has been a fun mini-sode with Kelly Bennett, the producer of this show.
Thank you.
And I'm Jeff Milo. You've been listening to A Little Too Quiet, and this is the Ferndale Library Podcast, brought to you by the Friends of the Ferndale Library, who you can find out more info about or maybe even join at ferndalefriends.org. The music you're listening to now and the music that opened this podcast is by John Duffy. And we're going to be coming back soon with more episodes. Thank you for subscribing. Find us on iTunes as well as Spotify and Google Podcasts. And leave us a review so we can find some more library-loving folks who can listen to this podcast and enjoy it. All right. And if you have any thoughts or memories to share about this library, you can email us at podcast@ferndalepubliclibrary.org. Podcast@ferndalepubliclibrary.org. Thanks for listening.
Thanks.